Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us an email or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are all archived on our website at recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about rejection. And I know that nobody likes rejection. They don't like to be rejected. They don't like their opinion not to be the one that wins or their suggestion to be taken. But, you know, sometimes it's unavoidable. And I think we're going to start with an interesting question that was brought up. You know, we announced the topics early, and so it was brought up in some of the pre-show discussion. And basically speaking, the question was, is rejection always a negative? You know, we think about rejection as, oh my God, this is a bad thing. It's negative. It didn't work. We don't like. Can't do. That kind of a thing. But is it always a negative to do rejection, to either be rejected or to have to deliver a rejection? And we're going to talk about doing both things in a gracious manner, both accepting rejection graciously and delivering a rejection graciously, so that the recipient can in turn be gracious and not hurt. Yeah, and so it doesn't hurt the relationship among the participants. Right. So let's talk about this. Is rejection always a negative? You know, thank you all for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. You know, we've got some accord going, and it's not always a negative, is it? Linda and others are saying it's not a negative if it is necessary to keep the process on track to success. It's not a negative. You need to have sometimes a rejection if it is necessary to keep the process on track to success. We've got something on the table that's been suggested that's really, it's not going to push us forward. Now, it might even be a good idea, but at the moment, at least, under the present circumstances, we need to take a different route. That might be something we'll look at in the future. Yeah, it doesn't make it bad. It makes it not now. And, well, that's a rejection because it's, well, we can't do that now. But is it a negative? Well, no, not really. We're going to table it. We're going to think about it for the future. You know, it might be a great thing after the step that we're going for has been fulfilled. Yeah. And so that's not necessarily a negative rejection. It's a, oh, can't do now. Let's think about that at a later point. See? And that's, well, it's a rejection for the present, but it's necessary to keep the process on track to success. Yeah. And yes, I know people are going polio at me, and this is true. A lot of you have been here before. Thank you all for being here, and thank you for coming back, and welcome to the new people. And it's true. I use Rotary as an example quite a bit because I happen to be a Rotarian, but also because Rotary, which is a service organization that you are a member of, and is divided into clubs that are local, but there's an overseeing international, I guess I'd call it an administration. So it's an international organization. Yeah, most of you are familiar with Rotary. Good point. Those of you who are not, it's easy enough to look up. It's a big service organization where people try to do good in the world and help other people. Yeah. The motto is service above self. And Rotary got this, and the Rotary, actually, that I'm a member of. Well, I guess he's not a member of my Rotary, but the local Rotary here got the idea that polio was a bad thing and that we could take the vaccine and go into, first it was Ethiopia, because a man named Ezra Tashomi was a Rotarian, is a Rotarian, he's a dear friend of mine, actually, and he got the idea, because he is from Ethiopia, that if we could take the vaccine to Ethiopia, it's the vaccine not being an injection, but being little bottles of drops that you put into people's mouths, children's mouths, that people would be relieved of the scourge of being crippled by polio. Wow, that would be wonderful, because he saw how awful it was in his home country and how readily available the vaccine was in the United States and how it had been basically eradicated in the United States, right? Right, yeah. So this was a wonderful thing. And there were lots of side issues when he started out, but the focus had to be, let's get people over to Ethiopia with the bottles of vaccine and get them lined up, get the people to understand that that's what's coming, and they have to come to the, well, it's not always even a clinic, have to come to the spot where the people with the vaccine are, you see? And so that was the track to success. There were lots of side issues, like other countries that could use it. But we started out with just that one as kind of our baseline. We had to get that done first. Countries were not rejected. The other ideas about funding were not rejected, you see, because it started out being funded just by Rotarians. But then it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And as a lot of you know, that polio is nearly eradicated in the world, because over the 20-year fight against polio, other issues got put back on the table that had been rejected originally, not because they were bad ideas, not because of negative, but because we couldn't do them now. And as the now progressed, they were put back on the table, and then there was the next country and the next one, and then there was logistics, and then there was getting funding, and then there was involving the governments, our government, the United States, and the government of the places where we were going. You see, this was all tied in, but you had to start focused smallish. Well, I guess it's not. People are saying it's not small to eradicate polio in Ethiopia. No, it wasn't small, but it was a focused idea. And lots of things were rejected in the path of getting the focus done. And then they were put back on the table when the idea expanded. And we thought, well, let's go into a neighboring country. Because you haven't really eradicated polio because it's catchy, it's contagious. You haven't eradicated polio anywhere unless you eradicate it everywhere. You understand? Yeah. Because it can spread again from one person. You know, there's this patient A type thing where one person can spread it accidentally, but if they give it to someone else and they give it to someone else, you've got an exponential revival of polio, which would really be awful. But you see, it evolved, and there was lots of rejection, and then put it back on the table. Now, it's practical. Now this is something we can think about. Now we've reached this stage. Yeah. So a rejection might not be negative if it's necessary to keep the process on track to success. And it might not be permanent. Mm-hmm. And people understand that. They understand the not now. It's not their favorite. But sometimes you got to kind of wait your turn with your idea. Because we've got to push forward, and this is the most direct route, and that's a really good idea, but not now. Stick around. You know, Justo and others are saying that also a rejection is not a negative if it's a teaching moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Shailene and others calling it a learning event. It's something that we thought about, and we researched it, and we learned from it. And yeah, this is a good point a lot of people are making. Sometimes you learn that the answer is no, it's not going to work. Or at least at the moment, we don't think it'll work. It would have to be greatly modified. You see, I'm a big, I'm never actually saying completely no to anything, because my experience has been that sometimes you revisit. In fact, oftentimes we revisit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as we get deeper in, it might be an idea that helps to modify a different one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But a teaching moment and a learning event, a suggestion is sometimes made, and we research it. And you know what? At Recipe for Peace Now, we don't have many rules. It's kind of whatever works. But one of the things we always think about is not only the successes of other groups basically trying to do what we're trying to do. They've got an idea that they want put forward. And we think about that, but we also think about the failures of groups that are similar to us and have similar goals and are dealing with similar issues, maybe even the same issue, but it didn't work. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's a teaching a moment and a learning event to think about, look, this is not a rejection exactly, but this idea was floated before. It was tried. And it was unsuccessful. Let's see why. Let's see if we can find out how come what looks like a sensible idea really didn't work, really wasn't what we thought it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How come that is? And then we look at it and we think about it. And we go, wait a minute, what did they do? What did they do kind of, well, wrong being a big word. But what did they do that we could do differently? Mm-hmm. Because we've had a teaching moment, what Shailene calls a learning event, and who's to call it a teaching moment? People and other people are using different wording for it, but it's the same idea. We've learned that maybe we're going to go a different path, mm-hmm. That maybe we should modify, that maybe we should, well, kind of reject that one for the moment and see what else we can do. Mm-hmm. When is a rejection not always a negative? Mm-hmm. A lot of people are talking about how to give a rejection. So if we had to reject an opinion or suggestion or plan, how can we do it graciously? And that's our topic for today. We've got something that, gee, we've looked at it. We've thought about it. It won't keep our process on track. It's a teaching moment. Uh-huh. A learning event. And we've got to say, let's go a different route. We've got to deliver a rejection. Mm-hmm. And we know how we feel when we get rejected, so we want to do it graciously. How do we do such a thing? Mm-hmm. Because we are, of course, a practical group, and it's nice to talk about theory, but it doesn't get us anywhere. I like to talk about how we're really going to do this. How do we deliver a rejection in a gracious manner so that we don't lose a participant. Yeah, so that we don't have a disagreement. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Eric and others have mentioned that the rejection doesn't need to violate the civility rules, right? And we talk about the civility rules on this show. And basically speaking, the civility rules say don't be rude. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rejection doesn't, you don't have to be rude. Even if you think it's kind of an outlandish suggestion and it gets rejected out of hand, it's somebody's opinion. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you get something that's so kind of far away that I wonder if someone's being sarcastic. My general idea is that they are not. And we all keep the civility rules in mind. Mm-hmm. And that you not answer in a sarcastic manner or in a rude manner. Actually, this is a good point. People are saying if they are being sarcastic, if you take it seriously, it'll deflate it. You know, that's a good point. I always pretend never to understand when somebody's being sarcastically rude. I take it on face value and act like they are sensitive idiots. You know what I mean? Kind of like, well, that's an interesting thought, but take it real seriously. It'll deflate it, because if you don't answer in kind, it's hard to fight or be nasty to someone who refuses to acknowledge that they understand that someone's being nasty or fighting. Mm-hmm. It ruins the bully. Because occasionally we have someone who really would like to breach the civility rules. And, as we have discussed in prior shows, by the way, prior shows archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. And we have someone who's attempting to breach our civility rules. They're being rude. And we can't exclude them from the group because they're integral. Because, you know, sometimes people get expelled. But they need to be there, and unfortunately they know it. If you don't, it's very hard for a bully to fight with someone who refuses to engage and takes what they say really literally. Mm-hmm. It's a trick that I employ all the time. It's very annoying to them. I get real frustrated. And if they try to pick a fight with a participant and not with the leader, because the leader can't be fought with, I jump in and answer for the participant because I'm the leader, right? Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to violate the civility rules. We're not going to be rude. We're going to be gracious. And also, I don't care how outlandish the recommendation is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to be a good example because we're the leader. And also sometimes, which is what the timeouts are good for, and we're going to get to the part where we have the timeouts with the food and the networking and like that. Sometimes you don't have to reject an idea in front of everybody, right? Pardon me. You can say, well, let's think about this later. And then you can talk to the person putting forward the suggestion or the idea or the opinion in a more private setting than in front of everyone. And we'll talk about, well, it's not for now. Mm-hmm. And we need cohesion. You know what I mean? You talk to them kind of privately so they don't keep bringing it up. Because one rejection's enough. Betty and others are making a good point that it's really a question of attitude. Mm-hmm. That your attitude needs to be, well, don't be an idiot. Your attitude needs to be, well, that's an idea. Let's table it for the moment, and let's work towards a more straightforward path. Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, that kind of a thing. It's a question of attitude. Mm-hmm. Angel and others are saying that you deliver a rejection in a gracious manner by explaining why. W-H-Y. By explaining why it's being rejected. I think that's it. I'm going to say the words that you guys say, I always say. I'm going to say it depends. And I'm going to say that because it does. It's a good idea. I approve of it. I think it's boffo to explain why. Depends on the situation, because sometimes the why explanation will cause the whole group to veer sideways into a debate about it. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, well, let's take that and let's table it. And if you don't explain why, then we won't have argument about it. Or someone may out and out ask why, and that, of course, demands an explanation. And not just the explanation is not just because I said so or because it's dumb. No, the explanation is something reasoned. And it indicates that the idea was valued and not dead, just shelved, right? Yeah, because people don't want to be thought of as dumb or is not valued in some way. No, we value everyone. Yes. So you might explain why, depending on the situation and if the question has been asked. See? Yeah. This is a good point that quite a few people are saying. They're saying that what we're really talking about is making the rejection not a rejection. So that people don't feel that they've been refused. Nicholas says, by not making it a rejection, recruit the participant with logic so that they willingly accept a new path and embrace it. By making it not a rejection, recruit the participant with logic so that they willingly accept a new path and embrace it. What you're really doing is not out and out rejecting something, but what you're doing is you are using a logical explanation to change someone's mind so that that's no longer their suggestion, right? You haven't rejected them, you've changed their mind, and they willingly go, wait a minute, yeah, I don't think at this time that's exactly what I had in mind. All right, I didn't mean it to come out that way. You ever have people, I say it all the time. You ever have people say, oh, well, yeah, it didn't come out right. That's not really what I meant when I said whatever it was. You're right. I didn't think it had that interpretation. Yeah, and sometimes that happens, that you've got an interpretation that's kind of, Yeah, I didn't really mean it like that. Yeah. And so you change their mind. They change their mind willingly because they see the logic in it. They see that's really a sensible thought. And, I didn't really mean it the way it came out, way it's been interpreted. Right. So that's not actually rejection anymore. It's a changing of the mind. Yeah. Yeah. Suki and others are saying that even the reasoning part, where you talk to someone and they go to chin, they say, yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think about it that way. That even that kind of reasoning should be in private for face saving. Yeah, sometimes people, they're more amenable to thinking about something in private and not in front of everybody where it looks like they're weak. You know, sometimes nobody likes to give in front of everybody else. But maybe they could think about it, and you could talk to them privately, right, at the timeout perhaps, and they could come back with a modified opinion. They could think about it, and then they wouldn't be embarrassed for the other participants and seem weak. Sometimes people get stubborn if you try to approach them in front of everybody else because it's a show. Yeah, what Suki calls face saving. Yeah, they want to save face. They don't want to show that they gave in, right? Yeah. Yeah, Jan and others are saying a private rejection is much more gracious and not in front of the group. Just naturally speaking, it's more gracious. You know, Kristen and others are making a good point. Sometimes it's not the leader who needs to do, which is usually us, right, who needs to do the rejecting, right? It's not our, well, it's not necessarily our role, but it's not something that we should do, and that we should act in a more democratic manner and put the idea to a vote. Ooh, we're getting a lot of people are saying that that's a dangerous idea because you never know how people are going to vote. Well, you have to be kind of certain. I rather like an anonymous vote where you don't raise your hand or something. Because, you see, if you raise your hand against someone's idea, then they've been rejected 7 times. That's not very gracious. Sometimes we put the concepts to a vote. What do you think? Should we pursue this? Is this something we would like to do? And you have to word it carefully so that it can become a yes or no, right? And to decide that depending on the group, depending on the complexity, depending on the issues, and depending on whether it's something that really can be put to a vote, it should be kind of a group idea, or whether or not you're really secretly kind of chickening out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to think about that. Whether it is that you are, well, kind of not exactly taking your responsibility, right? Yeah. Put it to a vote. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you have to be careful about that. Mm-hmm. You know, Juan and others are making a very good point also that when you are making a gracious no, a gracious rejection, when you need to deliver, not at the moment, let's table that. When you are need to do that to keep the group on track, and it happens sometimes repeatedly, and sometimes to the same person, you have to be careful about your body language and tone of voice. Mm-hmm. That really goes towards attitude. Your body language and tone of voice. Yeah, we've done whole shows on body language, haven't we? Archived recipeforpeacenow.com. But you do. You have to be careful to keep yourself neutral and not roll your eyes. And you know what I mean? And kind of, you know, show to the participants that, gosh, that was the dumbest thing I've ever heard. No. You are the third party impartial. You are the leader. It is your job to be gracious and civil as a good example. Yeah. And very important, yes. It is your responsibility to do so. Mm-hmm. And so you need to watch your body language and your facial expression and your tone of voice to keep it all level. Mm-hmm. And not get that, you've got to be kidding, look or attitude, because they probably weren't kidding. It was something that they truly thought would be a really good idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we want everyone's opinion, right? We want everyone's suggestions, but we also want to keep the process on track towards success. So there's kind of a balancing act going. Yes, I want to hear what you have to say. Yes, I value all of your thoughts, but we need to focus so that we can get the job done, so that we can be successful, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, we've now talked about delivering a rejection, mm-hmm, in a gracious manner. What happens if we get rejected? What should we do? How should we act so that we are gracious in our rejection? Yeah, sometimes we get rejected. Sometimes we've got an idea that we're kind of fond of, but the participants, the group, wants to go in a different direction. Mm-hmm. Yeah, now what? What should we do about that? Mm-hmm. How should we be gracious? How should we be a good example? Remember, that's really what we are. We are a good example. Mm-hmm. And Merrill and others are saying by acting as we want others to act if we need to deliver rejection. Yeah, by being a good example. By acting as others, as we can accept rejection by acting as we want others to act if we need to deliver a rejection, by being a good example. Mm-hmm. I would like you to be gracious if I need to say no. And I will be gracious if you wish to, if you reject something that I think might be a good idea. Mm-hmm. I am a good example. I might try to reason with you, but I will not fight with you. Mm-hmm. As Thomas says, we will remember the civility rules, because they apply to us too, right? Mm-hmm. The civility rules cut both ways. They apply to us too. We're the good example of the civility rules. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how should we do if we're on the receiving end? How about, as Ben and others are saying, by being flexible and open to new ideas? Yeah. Sometimes we have a lot of experience with this type of a group, this type of a topic, and we think that we've really got it aced. But we need to be flexible and open to new ideas. Yeah. What if someone else has an interesting idea? What if it's new? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What if it's something that we haven't done before, didn't think about? What if it applies only to this group? Yeah. Every group is different. Every issue is different. Nothing's exactly the same. We're not cookie cutters. Yeah. By being flexible and open to new ideas. Mm-hmm. Dorbetta and others are saying that when you receive a rejection, you should always ask why and really listen. Mm-hmm. Ask why. W-H-Y, and really listen. And the listen part is, of course, the most important. And then you might logically reason back without being rude, right? Because an explanation, why? Asking why. Parker and others are making a very good point that the main thing to do when you've been rejected is by not taking offense, because it's not personal. Not taking offense because it's not personal, we hope at least. Yeah. It's a path that we're going to take towards success, and your idea is being tabled. It's being rejected for the moment. But don't be offended. It's not personal. It really isn't. Especially if we have like a vote. Mm-hmm. This might be a time for a vote or for logic or for research so that we can have a learning or a teaching moment, right? Mm-hmm. What did other groups do? What should we do? Should we emulate them because they had success, or let's just say, should we not? Because it wasn't all that good an idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah. By asking why and by not taking offense. It's not personal. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are saying that they never view anything as a rejection. I do that. I never get rejected because I never view anything as a rejection. I view it as a modification. Mm-hmm. Yeah. People are saying view it as a counter proposal, a modification, a learning experience, teaching moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. As Zacchaeus says, that it's really a counter proposal because it says, well, no, let's do it this way. And then you say, well, let's think about that. Is that the logical next step? And then we talk it through. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, this is an interesting thing that I have seen leaders do. That's a real good point. A lot of you are making it because you've been in groups where usually you're not the leader, you're the participant, and we talk about gaining experience like that, right? In fact, just a few shows ago, we talked about experience and how it's interesting to see people lead and to see other groups and to see other issues and really, you know, get a sense of what's going on in the world. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, and of course, we would not do this, but you have to think about whether or not you might have slipped. How do we graciously receive rejection? Randy and others are saying by not engaging in a power struggle. Mm-hmm. because it's not personal. We're not going to take offense, right? And sometimes I do see leaders get stubborn about something because they're having kind of a power struggle within the group, right? You know, I always figure if somebody'd like to help me lead, go with God. And if you'd like to help with the issues and help with the research and like that, the more the merrier. I like participation. I value it, and I encourage it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So not engaging in a power struggle. Sometimes leaders are very impressed with the fact that they're the leader. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they have a kind of an inflexibility about what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. And if someone says, well, how about this as an idea? They take kind of offense because their position is being challenged, or at least they act like it. You know, I really don't think their position is being challenged, but they act like it, right? You've seen that. Yeah. People are saying it's a gender thing. I don't know about that. I've seen women do it too. And so it's important to remember why we're there, why the leader is there. And our only purpose is to reach a successful outcome, right? That's our one and only purpose. It's not to aggrandize ourselves or anything like that. It's to reach a successful outcome. And we have to remember that. We have to remember our purpose. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's an interesting point that James and others are making, that we can be gracious about rejection by kind of warding it off, by having a private conversation with someone, like for example, at the time out, who has a completely different idea, and kind of getting together on it and to modify each other's path, and then go before the group. Mm-hmm. Kind of get it ironed out before there's a public rejection. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kinsey and others are saying that we can be gracious by polling the participants for majority sentiment. Let's see if everybody feels this way. Let's see if this is the group sentiment, because it is. I, as leader, am really interested in what the group wants, what the group thinks, where the group wants to go, mm-hmm. what they feel is the next step. Yeah. By polling the participants for majority sentiment. See if everybody thinks so, or at least the majority. And I like this. This is a real good, we're going to kind of end the discussion on this note, because I see we're all really in agreement. And yes, we are going to try to get to the recipes this time. Sometimes I don't look over at the clock. You know, I've got a clock on the screen that shows how much time is left. And sometimes I forget to look over because we are so deep in conversation. I look up and I go, oh, my God, there's 63 seconds left. Fantabulous. So one of the best ways, and really the first and always way, to graciously receive a rejection, Agoupa says, by taking 3 deep breaths and thinking before reacting. You accept and really deliver rejection. Anything else, before you open your mouth, you take 3 deep breaths and think before reacting. Yes. I kind of like also to maybe do 3 deep breaths and think and call a timeout, because we might want to talk not in front of the whole group with our reaction. Mm-hmm. I mean, we might want to ask why in a more one-on-one setting. I call it private, but it's really not. Of course, we're all standing around in the same room, but it doesn't have that formality, right? And you could take someone aside and talk to them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what the timeouts are for. And, of course, Recipe for Peace Now thinks that if you're going to have a timeout, you should have some food involved. Yes. And I'm going to say the same little speech that you all have heard before, but it's so important. If you're going to have people bring food because it's convivial, it makes for a more pleasant time out. Remember, the food is really a tool to get us talking to each other and interacting and seeing each other as people. I know we might be hungry too, it might be dinner time, but it's still a tool to get us to relate to each other, and also a way to pull someone aside for a little private chat about why, for example, and to kind of logically argue with them without everybody having to hear it so that we can save face, as Suki says. And if you're going to have food, you're going to take a survey amongst your participants and ask about food allergies, food prohibitions, and religious prohibitions to types of food. You want everybody to have a good time and not be excluded in some way. Also, I think, and then you'll tell everybody about this survey, right? And it's very important. Also, I would like to tell people, ask people, when they come with something, to list what is in it. Not just say what it is, meatloaf, but to say what's in it so that I can run my eye down the list of ingredients and see if I can eat it. Now, I also think that as leader, I think we should bring a little extra food. I really do, because I hate to run out. Also, because it is good to have at least one dish that I call the safe recipe. It's safe because there's not too many ingredients. We've taken the survey. Nobody's allergic to anything, or has a food prohibition or religious prohibition. We're still going to list what's in it. And what is on the list would be items familiar to my participants. They would have eaten them before and know if they can. So this is the safe recipe. So here we go. It's a lentil and rice stew. It's actually quite delicious and kind of hearty. It's wintertime on this side of the globe. I know this is an international show, and some of you are heading into summer, but it's good all year long. So let's have a nice cup of red lentils, maybe a little bit more. You know that we're going to cook them and like that. 3/4 of a cup of rice. I like the long grain kind just because it stays better. 5 cups of vegetable stock. Might need a little bit more. You'll just see how it goes liquid-wise. I like to put a leek in here. It's kind of an unusual thing, though. It depends if you can get one where you are. And you know that leeks need some processing because they have dirt inside their leaves, right? So you have to wash it really, really, really well. So we're going to take that leek and we're going to cut it into chunks, into kind of thick slices. Let's have 3 garlic cloves that we're going to crush. You think I use too much garlic, then use less. A nice big can of diced tomatoes. No, we're not going to drain it. We're going to use the juice too, like a 16-ounce can. Let's have 2 peppers. A nice big red bell pepper that we're going to seed and vein and chop up, kind of coarse chop. And, you know, I like everything to look uniform, and it looks nice with the leeks, which we kind of made big slices. Well, chopped is a funny word for leeks, but you know how you make kind of the big rings. And let's have a nice yellow one that we're going to, yellow pepper. You can use a green one if you'd like, that we're going to seed and devein and chop up. Let's put some broccoli in here. Looks nice. I can get florets just frozen. You need to thaw them, of course, and pat them dry. Let's have a couple of cups of small broccoli florets. If you can't get that or it's hard, I think like a lima beans looks nice. Something green that looks nice and is tasty. A lima beans, which I can also get frozen. Corn would be nice, kernels of corn. Something to give it some texture. A couple cups of that. I'm going to add some corn in anyway. Do something green. Peas would be fine. Yeah, people are saying peas. Peas is fine too. And then let's have, oh, a cup of corn, the off the cob, the kernels, call it niblets. No, the kernels, they're easily gotten frozen here, pat dry, thaw. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And let's have a cup of green beans. Mm-hmm. If they're really long, we could cut them a little bit. Yeah. Also, I can get those frozen. Please do not use the canned on that. Neither the corn. And don't use canned anything except for the tomatoes, because the canned vegetables are soft and they've got kind of that salty texture to them. That canned taste. Use frozen. Use fresh if you've got it. It's a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. And let's put a little bit of basil in here. We'll shred up some basil. What about a tablespoon of it? Not too much. Okay. We're going to take our lentils and our rice and our stock. We're going to stick it in a nice big pot, cook it over low heat, a half an hour, because we need to make everything softish and cook through. Now we're going to add the leek, the garlic, the tomatoes with their juice, the peppers, the broccoli and the corn, and the green beans. We're going to add the whole thing in. Let's face it. We're going to throw everything else in. We're going to bring it to a boil, then reduce the heat and simmer it. If you've used fresh vegetables, it takes a little bit longer. If you've used the frozen, they're kind of not as hard as the fresh ones. But what you're trying to do is you're trying to cook it so that the vegetables are tender. Mm-hmm. Frozen will take less time. Mm-hmm. Canned, we're not going to do. Right? Right. And we've all got it now cooked through, and it's all soft and delicious and edible, and the beans are just fine because we're going to take one out and taste it to make sure. And it's all really done. Now let's add our teaspoon of shredded basil, maybe a little bit more, teaspoon and a half, because it mixes all through and looks lovely. A little salt and pepper. We're done. Yeah. Lentil and rice stew, very easy. Because it really makes itself in one pot, right? It's a safe recipe because it's vegetarian. Mm-hmm. And most people are not allergic to any of the ingredients, but we've taken our survey. And they are items that my people would have eaten before and therefore be familiar with. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that is our safe recipe. Yes. And we are indeed going to have time. Ha-ha. For our adventure recipe, which we've been kind of talking about getting to for the last few times. And people are going, well, how come you never get to it? I've got it. This time we're making it. It's going to be a lovely fish stew. This is an adventure recipe because a lot of people don't eat fish or are allergic to it, right? Yeah. And it's got wine. I know people tell me that the wine cooks off and it doesn't count. But some people count it. They don't want to have anything that had a wine in it. So you have to ask. You have to know. You have to say, this is the list of ingredients, right? Yeah. So this is my adventure recipe. It would be less adventurous if it was made with chicken, which it could also be done. We're going to call this a fish stew, but you could indeed use chicken. You know, of course, that you need to cook the chicken all around, brown it even more so than the fish because chicken cooks a little longer. But in any event, you don't put raw protein into anything. You brown it all around. Okay. So let's make it with fish. And you could make it with chicken, which would make it a safe recipe except for the wine. Okay. Let's have 2 tablespoons of oil. Let's have a couple of pounds of some sort of a firm white fish that we're going to chunk, make into chunks. Whatever you've got locally that will withstand being cooked and browned on all sides. Chicken would actually be cheaper in this recipe, too. You could take boneless, skinless chicken breasts, brown them on all sides also. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, make it a safe recipe. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have a nice big onion that we're going to slice up. Nice sweet one. I like that. 2 garlic cloves that we're going to mince. You think I use too much garlic? Use this. Let's have a half cup of white wine. Mm-hmm. 2 cans of diced tomatoes, 2 16-ounce cans. We're going to drain it this time. Yeah. No, don't save the juice. It there's no sense of saving it. The next time you go to use diced tomatoes and you need to not drain it, there'll be plenty of juice in there. Yeah. So we're going to drain it. We're going to drain them fairly well, actually. 2 cups of chicken broth. See, you could use chicken instead of the fish. It would be cheaper. Let's have a nice big can of kidney beans. You know to drain any kind of kidney beans, right? Any kind of beans that come out of a can, because they're in slime. You not only have to drain them, you have to rinse them off and get rid of any membrane, any shell, so to speak, that is sticking around loose, because it's ugly. It's not that they're not edible, but what do you want it for? It's disgusting. It'll look ugly in your thing. So you need to not only have to drain the juice out, you need to rinse the beans off and put them on a paper towel, kind of pat them dry. And let's have about a half teaspoon of minced thyme, just to give it some nice flavor. So we're going to put some oil in the pan, and we're going to take our chunks of fish or our chunks of chicken, which would make it a safe recipe. Well, it still has wine. It might be adventure anyway. And we're going to brown everything on all sides until it's nice and golden and done looking. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Not until it gets dry and black, but brown on all sides. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to stick whatever it is aside, the fish or the chicken. I like to, after this, I like to wipe the skillet clean after I take especially the fish out, because it makes kind of residue in the skillet. I'm going to wipe it clean and add a little more oil. Now we're going to do the onion and the garlic. Stir them around a minute or so until they get kind of soft and delicious. Then we're going to add the white rind. Another minute. Stir in the tomatoes. Remember, we've drained them. The chicken broth, the beans, which don't need a whole bunch of cooking because they're a can of beans, right? And the thyme. This is our sauce, right? We're going to bring it to a boil, reduce the heat, and simmer. What? About 10 minutes so that everything's incorporated. Now, we haven't forgotten our protein, which is either fish or chicken over there on the side there. Don't do both. Do either one or the other. And now, since it's basically cooked through, because we already cooked it before we set it aside, we're going to add it to the pan, add it to the pot. Cover, another 15 minutes until we're positive that everything's cooked through. That's the main thing about fish or chicken or whatever, what you're using. Pork. I suppose you could. People are asking about other kinds of protein. I think a light-flavored protein like chicken or fish is best in this because it's kind of a light sauce. Yeah, and it kind of goes with it, and it'll get overpowered if you use pork or ham or meat or something. But anyway, the rule is always the same to cook it through, right? Right. So that is our adventure recipe. I serve it with rice. Big thing of rice on the side. Rice cooker is the only thing I own that only does one thing because I serve so much rice. Yeah. You could use pasta. George always votes for mashed potatoes. There's nothing wrong with that. Yum. And that is our adventure recipe. Easy to do. Also kind of a one-pot wonder, really. And I like that because then we'll really do it and not go, it's too hard, too much, too long, right? And that is the adventure recipe because of the fish and because of the wine. You want to eliminate the fish, you could use chicken. You want to eliminate the wine, just add some more chicken broth a little bit. It's not very much wine in there. But people do object. I think it adds a nice flavor. But if you have people that truly are strict about it, they have a prohibition or a religious prohibition, be aware of it. So that is our adventure recipe. Yes. And I see that we are now nearly up on our time. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for listening and for coming. And please do come again. If you would like to contact us, we're at recipeforpeace.com. recipenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.